What do you got for Jefferson here? And okay. Is this going to be ending on a high note, or are you going to be ending on a rant? I think you start with the headaches.
Oh, yeah. So, like, again, oh.
It's just
I don't want to go on my rant on this, but all right. So you have to choose between two people. One of them's more, you want to choose a more common man. And somehow the media has convinced you that the guy who likes to farm and can make you a pair of shoes is not the common man, but the guy who used to play the violin and study until he got migraines every day, he's the common man on his aristocratic farm with his strawberry blonde hair and his soft baby hands. Like,
stop it.
Who fled
fast horses.
I don't know. By the way, I have no source for the soft baby hands. I didn't want to be clarify that. I did not see that.
I feel like we could take some. The things we take liberties with are going to be things like that. It's, yeah. I think it's okay.
This episode is mostly liberties. No, no, but like, talk about the sales pitch of the century. Like, convincing the entire American population that this dude who risked life and limb and his family's life and limb to secure the aid needed to win the American Revolution from your opposition's greatest geopolitical power, who, by the way, was like not super pumped about colonies deciding to be free, but like somehow convinced him to do that.
So what else do you have for Jefferson then? Not an everyman. Let's be clear. I mean, violin can be kind of painful sometimes, especially if you're not good at it. So maybe he should have just taken up like saxophone.
Oh, did we just deduce that Thomas Jefferson was horrible at the violin?
It's just a really bad violin player.
Very bad violin player. Ooh, that could be. Yeah. Like, at least live, you're trying to get him to seem more like a common man. Say he played the fiddle. Yeah. Like,
right? Yeah, there you go.
I want to talk about, I had a struggle. Kyle was very good to tolerate me for those four episodes. I had a struggle with Thomas Jefferson, so I actually don't want to talk about Thomas Jefferson anymore.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about one of the coolest dudes who Thomas Jefferson never talked to.
Hmm.
Or wrote to, I should say. Benjamin Banneker.
I don't think I've ever heard of this guy.
Oh, I was like, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with stamps. And yeah. I vaguely remember getting a series of stamps from my uncle, and this guy was on it, and that's my last memory of this guy. This guy should be taught in every school. He's absolutely fascinating. He was born November 9th, 1731, in Baltimore. So he was kind of an interesting family dynamic. So he was born to a free African-American woman named Mary Banneke. So different spelling, B-A-N-N. E-K-Y, an informally enslaved man named Robert, who reportedly was of royal New World descent. But what's interesting is his maternal grandmother, Molly Welsh, was an English woman who had come to Maryland as an indentured servant. So like a temporary slave. I don't like to use the word, like people like to lump indentured servitude and slave.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like the same thing.
Not really.
Yeah, no.
And later bought. After she was out of indentured servitude, she bought a bunch of slaves, which is wild. But one of them was Robert, Benjamin's father, who she then freed and then married him. And then they lived as interracial.
Oh, so you could do it that way. I just want to point that out for Mr. Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson. I mean, that's kind of wild. So they lived on the self-sufficient tobacco farm in Maryland, and he didn't really have that much formal schooling, but he learned to write. And because at the time there was no school for black children.
Are you talking about Benjamin now at this point? Or oh, Benjamin. Father,
yeah,
still?
I'm talking about Benjamin. But he, you know, there was a small Quaker school. I always like to shout out like people who at this time, like it's, like the same way I go on these rants about how awesome Abigail Adams is. I think it's important also to shout out like people who are doing the right thing when it was not a, when there was, honestly, there was repercussions for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
that's the definition of integrity, doing the right thing when no one's looking.
Right. So he did go to a small Quaker school that was run by this guy, Peter Heinrichs. But it was, that's rarity. That's a rarity in the 1730s to have somebody willing to educate a young black child. So like, shout out. I really do. I think that's something that we should talk about more, as much as we do, and rightfully so, talk about the story of slavery. You know, tangentially to what we're talking. I don't want anybody to get the impression that we're doing some deep dive on it and that you should stop at where what we're talking about. But I think on the flip side, you got to talk about the Abbeys, you got to talk about the Peters, you got to talk about the JQAs and JAs who are on the same time being like, no, these are people. Why the heck are we?
Because we're so critical of some of the other ones. I mean, if you're going to be that critical of Thomas Jefferson, then yeah, you have to shout out Abigail for, you know, the decisions and the actions that she had, or shining examples from the past that seem to be so few and far between.
Yeah, I mean, especially where, you know, that they were in a very pro-slave area. I mean, I'm sure Peter Heinrichs did not have took a lot of flack for doing this, but he did the right thing. No, and, you know, yeah, history has proven him right. So as Ben starts growing up, Ben starts getting older, it's pretty apparent that he's a genius. Like, yeah, we're not talking like he's smart. We're talking that he is one of the smartest people in the entire colony, probably.
So, like, smarter than Madison, do you think? Or on par with him, maybe?
I think the only rival he had was the other Big Ben, which is Benjamin Franklin. And talking about Big Ben, he made the first clock made of American parts.
That is amazing. Does it still exist?
I wasn't able to find if it still exists.
Because it says it maintained it for 50 years, which is impressive.
Oh, yeah. So he made a clock, which is probably like, he made a clock out of wood after he basically, somebody let him borrow their pocket watch. And then he built a clock out of that. And it kept its time accurate for 50 years. But no pocket watch keeps its time for 50 years. No. How do you build something more accurate than the thing you're holding? Like, how is your first go building something better than, like, this watch that was imported from England that you modeled it and then built it after wood? Like, how much smarter are you than the guy who made that other watch? Like, how much of an upgrade of a human are you?
Well, blowing it up should allow for more precision, though, too, right? As you shrink things, the smaller they get, the less precise, I would imagine, because of the machining of, like, those really small gears.
Yeah. See, I'm not a mechanical engineer, but do you know who was?
Him.
Benjamin. Yeah.
What was this I saw in your notes, too, about the accurate weather forecast, tidal projections?
All right, so this is how he ends up. So by the time, I want to make sure I get the years right. So we're talking like 1780, let's say 1780s. He starts doing this in 1770, 1780s. He starts observing tidal charts. All right, he starts observing tides, right? And he starts building these tidal charts.
That's super useful for developing navy.
Right? And trade and all that stuff. Yeah. He then starts building, I can't pronounce the word they're called, but astronomical tables and
Spell it?
I'm going to pop it in chat.
Yeah, no.
Right? Like, Kyle, like, I'm bad at pronouncing, but come on.
Ephemerides.
I'm not going to lie, I kind of knew what this word was when I saw it, just because I know that's like that prefix is. That prefix and suffix are like lines of space, essentially like heavenly body lines. So I'm like, they're probably astronomical charts.
But have like fun ethereal? Yeah.
Bingo, no, you got it.
Yeah.
So he starts developing these astronomical tables, and they are crazy accurate. So he starts publishing different almanacs, and so he's putting out all these almanacs, and they're super accurate. So this is like one of these things. We're going to take a liberty here for a second. There are some that say they were about as accurate methodologies that rival what we had in the 1950s, so 180 years later.
Really?
Right. How true that is, I don't know. I think they would be like, we would need to do a much deeper dive on their accuracy. But the fact that there's people, like, even if it's as accurate as they had in 1900, that is still insane.
120 years better than what they were dealing with at the time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So his almanacs become crazy, crazy pop, very, very crazy popular. And they're basically, I always love this. He would just keep adding the state name to the almanac, so it'd be like Benjamin Banneker's Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia almanacs.
So it just kept getting longer and longer.
There's no great backstory behind it besides like something I ran into when I was researching this that I'm like,
very, very smart guy, not very good at naming books.
So he's next writing to Jefferson in August of 1791, and what he in this letter, but we'll go through the entire letter. It would be, I mean, it's yeah, interesting. I'd like to just Google.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, he calls out Jefferson and is like, "Hey, man, you wrote that all people are created equal in the Declaration of Independence, but you have slaves." Like that's his letter.
Good for him.
He writes this. He wrote, "I apprehend you will embrace every opportunity to eradicate that train of absurd and false ideas and opinions which so generally prevails with respect to us." And by us, he means Black Americans. Mm. He wrote the Secretary of State and be like, "Hey, man, that whole weird part about like, hey, all men are created equal. Like, I'm looking around. I'm living in Maryland right now. And I'm looking around. And it doesn't seem like you really believe that." But so he then, like he, Jefferson had known about like Banneker's successes and all this stuff. So again, this is 1791. So right at this time, Andrew Ellicott, he's the guy who was commissioned to survey the boundaries of Washington, D.C. He actually reached out to Banneker and was like, "Hey, can you help? Can you be an assistant surveyor?" There is this mythos that he was like he designed, Banneker designed D.C., Banneker never claimed that. Nobody at the time ever claimed that. I have no idea where that rumor comes from, but it pops up a lot in pop history.
Banneker invented the grid system.
Yeah. Like, right. So he performed all like the calculations, established the baselines for the city's layouts. It was just
basically their mathematician. He just did their math for him.
Yeah, he did their math. He worked for him for 3 months. He was super impactful. He laid out the boundaries of the city, but I mean, the guy did a lot of impressive stuff. We don't need to like make up stuff. He designed the city, which is a wild claim, by the way. So Jefferson is messaging back and forth with Jefferson. Jefferson starts giving these like, this is crazy. So Jefferson's responses, they're not dismissive, but ooh, are they condescending?
Oh, let's hear one. Do you have one?
Let me see if I can get one. I have one in my other notes. Let's see if I can bring that up. One of them, I'm not even sure if I can read.
Isn't that...
Because it's so condescending. Like, you're going to be like, maybe Jefferson is not super nice. Let's see. Jefferson replied to his accomplishment, "Nobody wishes more than I do to see such proofs as you exhibit of Black talent."
See such proofs. Oh.
Yes.
Like the working clock in his backyard. It's been going for 40 years at this point.
Oh, here it goes. "So, I've taken the liberty of sending your almanac to Monsieur de Corset to show the nature has given to our Black brethren talents equal to those of other men." And at first when you read that, you're probably like, oh, it's Jefferson being very like a qualitative. Yeah,
that sounds good, right? Saying, but, hey, this is proof that he's as good as the white one.
Which is wild. That's a wild thing to even have to say that. I mean, they're more like, oh, let me pat you on the head, little child. Yeah. Good job of you trying to science.
That's just infuriating.
Oh, it's like, oh, Jefferson, you invented the swivel chair. Not exactly. I mean, it is revolutionary, but not exactly the most mind-bending invention of all time. Oh, I can predict tides and where solar eclipses are going. So he ends up having this career. He creates all these super accurate almanacs, and he predicts solar eclipse and lunar eclipse and positions of stars.
Did I see this right? He actually included abolitionist essays in his almanacs too.
So what he used to do?
I love that.
So what he used to do is he'd have this like really accurate like map. And so you say you're a ship captain and you're like, okay, this map, this is going well. And then you'd flip the page and it'd be like, so this is why you should free all African Americans. It'd be like, flip the next page, more title charts. And he'd be like, what? But like, oh, maybe I should read that. So his idea, this is wicked smart.
Brilliant, yeah.
This is
what does this guy have to say?
Because who's buying almanacs?
Yeah, the people that are ferrying all the people across from Africa to the New World.
Yep. It's farmers, it's traders, it's all these people who like have money and influence, right? It's this entire artisan class and aristocrat, kind of aristocrat class, because they're the people who need to know it. If you're just like some like dude working like as a cobbler, you don't give a crap about the tithes. And if you're buying an almanac from somebody, you already have that almanac's already establishing your credibility, right? Like somebody's using your stuff. And you're like, oh, by the way, I'm a free black man. Oh, by the way, I'm also brilliant. I'm a polymath. Look at all this crazy stuff. Like, do you want to see my clock? then you're doing this like beautifully written essay, either that you wrote or other people wrote. I'm not saying like there's a dispute that he plagiarized people. I'm saying like you'd have guest writers in there.
Yeah.
And they would write. Like explaining how, and sometimes it was passionate essays, and other times it was very logical essays. And I'm like, that's brilliant. That's such a smart move. You should get so much credit for that.
God, this guy should have gotten, we should have given him one of Jefferson's episodes.
We should have. Honestly, we should have. We
can, I mean, go, we kind of did. We kind of did just now.
Yeah. Yeah, we just now. We took it back. Yeah, this is me. Yeah. Weird story. And he's on a postage stamp in 1980. And I will close out this portion with my favorite thing I discovered during this, which is the Hall of Fame of Great Americans, which he is one of them. So is Jefferson. But
dubious list. Dubious list.
It's okay. Why is it dubious? Hit me. Go on.
Jackson was on there. And there's some pretty good names on here. There's some oversights. There's some, I don't know how much I like seeing the Jeffersons and the Jackson's on there, but you know, what are you gonna do?
More infuriating is the list of people who were nominated but not elected. Sam Adams is one of them. Like, how do you not elect Sam Adams? William McKinley. You have Robert E. Lee, but not William McKinley.
Jefferson Davis, there he is.
Wait, is he on the list of people not?
People are nominated but not elected, yeah.
Yeah, no, he shouldn't be. If you're a Confederate, you should not be on the list of great Americans.
Yeah,
Tesla. Tesla wasn't even American. What are you talking?
It even says in the description there, Serbian.
I am. That's hilarious. We may have to deep dive into hot takes. Johnny Appleseed.
That's not even a real person, is it?
I don't think it is. I think there's a dude who kind of like the legends built around.
Yeah.
Somebody nominated Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
I hate this list. I hate this. You watched in live time me go from the happiest thing, which I thought there was like a Hall of Fame on Great Americans, to now just realizing I think there's a bunch of people just nominating doing. This is like how I would nominate people. Jokes. Right. Just pure jokes.
Right. Also, Johnny Appleseed, a real person. Born in Massachusetts Bay in 1774.
All right. Real quick. Like, is his name Johnny Appleseed?
Born John Chapman. American pioneer nurseryman who introduced trees grown with apple seeds as opposed to trees grown with grafting. So he's the genius who figured out that you could just plant the seed rather than doing some complicated tree surgery.
So him and squirrels, similar development of horticulture. Yes.
All right, is that a happy enough thing to land on?
I'm angry, but I'm happy, so it's fine. But please comment below if you want Kyle and I to start our own Hall of Fame of Great Americans, because I guarantee it'll be better than this one.
Well, we did get to update our Mount Rushmore on the website. Quincy Adams has knocked his father off of the last spot on our mount.
Wait, so Jefferson's up? Is Jefferson up there?
Jefferson never made it because we gave the tiebreak to John Adams, the father, the dad. But then now that we just finished with his son got it high enough to bump his dad off the list now.
So is it Washington, Madison, Monroe, and JQA?
Yes. Yes.
I'll take that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
Something poetic about Jefferson. It's a solid list. Something poetic about Adams and Jefferson both not being on there.
Right. What's the opposite of Mount Rushmore? Mount Slow Less?
Yes, we should have a Mount Slow Less, though. Because people won't get what the joke until they're like, huh. Can you see if Laura will make us a map for the bottom four? Mount Slow Less. Anybody who's listening to this as a podcast, Kyle is neon red laughing at his own joke.
Oh my God, I know. I'm so happy.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I should have written an outro, but I never actually did. So please join me in thanking Eric for all of the amazing note-taking things that he's done today. Please reach out and tell us your favorite stories that maybe we missed. If you want to reach us, you can send us messages at buckstartsherepodcast@gmail.com. There is no "the" in front of that. If anybody's trying to send us messages about the journals.
Please send those. By the way, people listen to that. We're very excited to send those out.
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. And thank you, Sue. We've got your messages. And once we get once we figure out how we're going to actually make these, we'll get those going your way. But yeah, that's going to do it for us. So on your way out, please hit those like button, subscribe on your favorite platforms. We'll see you all next week.
Peace.